Cheers. Just practicing for New Year's. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Below the Rim podcast. Per always, I have the pleasure, Jacob Lieb here, of being your host. Got a little bit less than a starting five here today, but we're hoping to get the full squad back after the holidays. Even still, excited to have Alex, Brian, Michael with me here today. Team, how we doing?
Fantastic.
I'm excited, you know.
I can feel that holiday spirit.
Fun fact, we played bingo last night. When was the last time you guys played bingo?
I have a couple follow-up questions. Was it a small group of people playing bingo or a large group of people playing bingo?
Was it a bingo? 40? 45? It was a group. It was a group.
And was there real money? Was there real money on the table?
So, yes. So there's blackout bingo where you have to get all of the board, the entire board. And right before that round, me and Dylan, my cousin, many of you know in this podcast, we said, hey, if we win this $400 prize, either one of us, we're going to split it. And my cousin Dylan won it, so I'm $200 richer.
Wow.
That's huge.
It was big. People get excited about New Year's. When you say bingo, nothing more exhilarating.
I can imagine that.
Mm. Do we even have this podcast? I don't think we're going to be able to get close to that level of excitement here today. You know, maybe we just acknowledge it's a losing proposition and move on.
I'm still coming down from yesterday.
All right, hey, maybe it'll bring that energy to our discourse here today, Michael.
Perfect.
Well, you know, I think for today, wanted to do our listeners a favor, and I also think some of our collaborators, and spend some time just catching y'all up on what's happened over the past, 7 to 10 days. Michael's been out here playing bingo. I've been crunching some of the NBA tape, really digging deep into some, Friday night NBA action, unpacking what's going on for the Nuggets versus the Cavs, some trends with the Kings and what they're going to do post Mike Brown firing. So I figured we'd spend the first part of this just going over some headlines, going over some major takeaways, and kind of getting some rapid reactions.
Can I ask you a question? I want to ask you a question.
Yeah, please.
When you're doing all this, are you watching snippets of games? Are you watching the games themselves?
I'm really glad you asked. Thanks for that question, Brian. So, this is a plug, not a sponsor, but not surprisingly, NBA League Pass, great resource, we actually have the ability to do a condensed game consumption. Various different ways to do it. I like watching all of the plays in a game, so I get about 48 minutes of action, and I will kind of review the game trends ahead of time to see if there's anything worth watching, and then hop around and find the plays that I'm most interested in.
Wait, that's super interesting. And you wouldn't be able to do that without League Pass, is what
you're saying. No, you have to have League Pass. So that's the one.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Really quick on that, because there's the YouTube 10-minute highlights where they do each play.
Yeah.
Is it much better than that, or is it similar?
It's all plays, so you get a little bit more of a feel of where those highlights exist in the context of a game. But for those that want a little bit less, those 10-minute condensed highlights are a great place to start.
Yeah, the only problem I see with the 10-minute highlights, because I'll watch those, you don't see the screw-ups.
No.
You know? They don't show a lot of misses in those.
And
it doesn't give you a good... I agree with you, Alex. It doesn't give you a good how the game went, the flow of the game. I'm sure, Jacob, you get a better understanding of the ups and downs and who played well and who didn't.
Yeah, and I think it's a perfect intro to the first topic, which is the Kings lost 6 in a row, right? And after the 5th, of those 6, Mike Brown was fired. The really hard part about this stretch was the last 5 games were a 5-game homestand. And I think there was a couple of things that I found interesting that I'm interested how you guys feel about it big picture. But for me, it was less about the fact that they lost 5 in a row, but how they lost and who they lost to. So they lost 130 to 129 to the Nuggets, which might feel defensible, right? But for a team like the Kings, who have made offense their entire identity, you can't lose when you're trying to out-offense somebody. And that's currently what the Nuggets have going on for them as well. There was zero licks of defense played They were just running back up and down the court and kind of getting whatever look they wanted back and forth. Then they proceed to lose back-to-back to a pretty hapless Lakers team, both at home. So it was a home, two-game home set for the Kings, back-to-back. And, you know, just didn't even... the first one, they were pretty much a 13 to 20 point margin the whole time. Then they come back, lose the next one in a close game by four, get blown out by a Pacers, and then in the last game of a homestand against the Pistons, lose in a back and forth affair. And I think one of the really interesting things about this stretch for them was their identity that got them to the playoffs, the light the beam season, was dribble handoffs with Sabonis that unlocked a lot of open looks and clear spacing for all the role players to, you know, kind of exceed. And they were offensively excellent and defensively below average. And I think it's interesting when you make that your entire identity, they're now, the reason they fired Mike Brown is they're now just offensively okay and still defensively inadequate. So I wonder if it's more going to be one of those things that we kind of look back at this era for the teams that really prioritized a run and gun offense, right, and some of that three-point shooting as a lack of sustainability. Or maybe it is just the fact that when Domantas Sabonis is your second-best player and he can't guard the rim, you're not going to be successful. I think Mike Brown's a great coach, but that was one of the probably biggest impactful things in a team that clearly is floundering in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was doing some other research, and I'm looking at the Kings by minutes played. And their core four, so you're looking at Fox, Sabonis, Keegan Murray, and DeRozan, are all playing 35 minutes plus. And the only team who plays their guys more are the Knicks, and obviously Tibbs just runs his guys like crazy. And so I'm wondering if it was the same thing last year or if they've done that previously. But I was also wondering, like, the supporting cast as well. Like, I know they've had, like, a Harrison Barnes and a Davion Mitchell – previously, like, I don't know who's coming off the bench now, but I feel like that group might be a little weaker as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've had some, like, small injuries around the outside. Like, Lyles is a big part of their second unit, and he's been out. But even guys like Keon Ellis has been marginalized, where I would expect them to have a bigger role because he actually is somebody on their team that can play a little bit of on-the-ball defense. So I think, to your point, Brian, right, I don't think it's just a Mike Brown issue. I think it goes back to a little bit of the comments that I made last week, which is, like, organizationally, they have not added to their team via the draft, right, or free agency. They've let key pieces go, and they define themselves, to be a superior offensive organization. And, it's just not to that degree of quality.
I know you mentioned it before, but anyone, I guess, from a DeMar DeRozan perspective, because he was the big addition, and they lost some, like, smaller pieces, but do we think it's just not as good of an offensive flow fit, or is there something else going on? Because, you know, that was the big change, and obviously it's not going well.
I think it's and Alex, I think you're probably the best suited to comment on this. But even, like, when you play pickup basketball, right? When you're playing against the same guys, the things that they did in game one and game two aren't going to work the same in game three and game four, right? And I think for the Kings, it's kind of a epitome of that, right? Where you put certain things on tape for 2 years, you try and run that same thing the third year, defensives know how to cover it, right? You can't have a dribble handoff create the same type of offensive kind of excellence, right? That you might have in the past.
But I think, like, or my thought is maybe, like, when you can't spread it as well, teams can defend it as a little better too. But, I don't know for sure. But
yeah, it's definitely a problem, and they don't have a ton of moves to make.
I still find it, I don't know your guys' opinion on this, but the Mike Brown firing to me is just crazy. He was coach of the year last year, right? I mean, and he
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah, yeah. But he's done a good job, and I guess I know expectations, and you look at the lineup on paper, they should be awesome. Sabonis, DeMar, De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk. I wanted them to be really good. But I feel like they put way too much blame on coaches all the time, and especially the Kings organization. They fired, how many coaches in the past, like, 12 years, seasons? Been like seven or something crazy? How do you get continuity? And it is not Mike Brown's fault. I saw that four-point play was against the Pacers, where De'Aaron Fox just like lost his guy, then closed out, and the most egregious thing you could do, let him shoot the three if you're down by three, and then he got the 4-point play and they won the game. That's not Mike Brown's fault. That's De'Aaron Fox. The players have to take accountability. I just feel like the coaches now are, a lot of their job is speaking to the media, managing perception of a team, and then being the scapegoat. And I thought Mike Brown was unfairly. He should have at least had the rest of the season. That's insane. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
No, they've had 12 coaches since 2006. Which,
12 coaches,
I mean,
Yeah.
Damn. It's like incredible amount of turnover.
Crazy.
Yeah, I feel like the Kings are, like, whenever anyone gets drafted to the Kings, I just have, like, that feeling in my stomach where I'm like, oh, it's too bad for that promising young player. Like, he's just not going to work out. And, like, I think they drafted Fox, right?
Yeah.
But, like literally, like, 95% of those guys just, like, disappear. Like, I don't know. There's something organizationally going on there. And you thought they were turning it around with, you know, a couple years ago they, like, you know, took the Warriors to the wire in the playoffs in seven games. But you thought they were turning the corner there. I remember, that must have been 2 years ago, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, first round 2 years ago, seven games.
And so I remember last year, I remember thinking De'Aaron Fox was like a dark horse MVP candidate. Because I was like, their team on the rise, good regular season. He could put up 30 points a game and he could be MVP. So to see that team go a different direction and now struggling, you know, definitely tough to see. I'd still rather be a Kings fan than a Bulls fan, but that's not saying much.
Yeah, it's not saying much. I think the De'Aaron Fox conversation is the conversation that comes next. And I think there's a lot of teams that he would benefit if he were moved to. Will be interesting to see as we progress towards the trade deadline if any of that smoke turns into real fire and we can see some kind of league-altering actions with trades. Because if he is on the market, he all of a sudden becomes the number one target. I believe he's like 28 years old, been in the league for 8 years. Knows how to play off good bigs, right? Everything you'd want in kind of a second primary score.
Yeah, who's getting rumored? I heard San Antonio and Miami. Is that right?
Yeah, I Phoenix is in there as well, but I don't know who they trade in order to get there. I don't like really see the Kings wanting to take Bradley Beal back, but I think the one that makes the most logical sense and it will be a good transition here is the Spurs. The other big thing, one of the other big things that have happened kind of in our holiday hiatus here was the NBA's showcase on Christmas. I'll be the first to say, kind of hated that there was NFL. I really have a lot of thoughts on that, but probably for another segment or another day. But we
it's
had
our
we
day,
had
five, Roger.
Yeah, get out of here. We had five really good games. I know not all of them were super uber competitive the whole time. But I really enjoyed sitting on my couch and watching basketball. I think the two highlights were the first game for me. I thought that Wemby in MSG was an absolute show. They went back and forth, Wemby and Mikal Bridges, actually, shockingly, which I think said a lot for the Knicks, too, in terms of having another guy be able to step up outside of Brunson and Kat and be a primary go-get buckets kind of score. And Wemby really kind of putting the Spurs on his back. Definitely shooting too many threes, but also hitting him down at like a 50% rate, which is astronomically impressive for a guy who's 7'4" and you can't defend a shot that he takes. But really an awesome game. And then obviously the highlight later in the day, continuing to turn back the clocks, get a classic Steph LeBron showdown. Steph hitting three threes that are unmakeable for any other person on the planet in the last 2.5 minutes. Only to have kind of a very much prototypical Andrew Wiggins letting Austin Reeves truly walk to the basket for a game-winning layup. So I think those were the two highlights. We had some other games, but great Christmas Day action.
I feel like the highlight may have been Philly beating Boston and setting themselves up to win the championship. So, you know.
tell me more about how they set themselves up to win the championship.
No, I need to talk about Christmas Day for a second, because as someone who does not celebrate Christmas, it's one of my favorite days of the year. I honestly think besides NBA playoffs and the All-Star weekend, it's literally my favorite day of NBA, just sitting down and watching basketball. And even before the game started, like, all five matchups on paper were great. There's usually, like, a game or two that doesn't get me excited, but they were all exciting games, all close games, which you don't always get in the NBA these days. And you mentioned, like, NBA versus NFL on Christmas. I'm like, I looked it up. I'm like, I didn't know this. The NBA's been playing on Christmas Day since its inception. So yeah. I'm like, this isn't going anywhere. I still think Christmas is the NBA's, but... yeah, I thought all games were great. I think the first game honestly was the most exciting. I mean, Wemby is just—he's just fun to watch. I mean, we'll do that section later where we talk about how much we're willing to pay to see someone. But he's obviously up there. It's like you can't even like put a word on it. But I think seeing Bridges do what he did—I think that's the difference between that team being a championship contender and not. Like, if he can win a game for you in the playoffs by putting up 40. Like, I think they could go toe-to-toe with Boston. So I think it'll be really interesting. But I honestly think the other big note was Philly being Boston. I mean, I said it last episode, but I think they just show, like, when they have all the pieces there. And they still don't, but at least all the major pieces, they can beat anyone. So I think health is the biggest thing. I think they've won three in a row, the last three games, George, Maxey, and Embiid have played, so they're playing tonight as well, but I think they'll be really interesting to watch going forward, so.
Brian, what's the Goot setup at the house for Christmas Day basketball? Are you on the couch with a plate full of veggies and hummus, wearing pants, not wearing pants? What's the setup?
It used to be more of a setup. I mean, this year it was the 9-month-old baby playing on the ground with me watching TV and Jenny yelling at me because the baby is also just staring at the TV. And I was like, this is the one day where it's just got to happen.
So he's taking it in. He's learning about basketball.
No, and I was talking about the game. I was like telling him what was going on. So like it was an educational day. So
you had the whiteboard out doing some X's and O's as the game's growing.
I'm drawing up X's and O's. I should have been doing that. That's actually a great idea. usually it's like I'll make a 11 a.m. hits. I'll make just a big pot of pasta. And I'll just kind of eat that throughout the day.
So pesto, marinara, where?
I'll have to mix it up throughout the day. But don't sleep on the combo, pesto and red sauce in the same bowl.
Well, I just had dinner and I'm getting hungry again.
If you haven't done it, try it.
The old tie-dye sauce right there, is how I refer to that. That. A little mix of colors.
Ooh, I like that.
A little color show.
Yeah, I thought the interesting thing on Christmas Day is a lot of teams kind of showed us exactly who they are, which I thought was kind of a apropos way to celebrate Christmas, kind of show your true colors. For me, right, I think the Knicks and the Spurs showed that they have the offensive upside similar to every team in the league, and that when it comes to getting buckets, those two teams can actually go ahead and score, at their peak, right? With anybody. I think they're both very fun offensive teams. I think they have, steps to take to be truly serious contenders with the top echelon in their conference. Brian, you already touched on the 76ers, right? I don't think we need to go there more. I think the game that was actually very interesting was the Mavs versus the Wolves.
T-Wolves.
And I think it showed, for me, the T-Wolves went on their run when they played defense, and they let the Mavs back in the game when they didn't. And I think it goes back to a lot of the consternation and conversation about the T-Wolves this to date has been on, what's going on the offensive side. I think it's far less important than them getting back to a defensive identity that is just absolutely hounding other teams. And I think they've started to. And I think Christmas Day was a really good indication that when they are on their best defensively, they can, elevate their game to some of the best. When they're not, they don't have the offensive firepower to kind of cover up some of those mistakes. And I think that that shift back to defensive first mindset is what can kind of catapult them back into contention.
I think the sad part about that game was the Doncic injury. Sorry, go ahead, Michael.
No, I was about to say on the defensive side of things, agreed with that, Brian. But like Randall, I know a lot of guys go at Randall. Do you think he has the capability? I mean, I know I can't even tell if he's got the engine on defense. He feels like a guy that likes to play offense and then defense is like optional. But again, I don't know what you guys think. I haven't seen enough of him particularly on the defensive end, but I saw a couple plays where like guys were going at him.
And I feel like this is a good plug for I'll do a quick defensive plug here. I feel like it's appropriate. I'm like that guy who you don't need to run a play for. I just find a way to get the offensive rebound and put it back in.
You're going to get it up. You're going to get it to the rim.
Yeah, I'm going
to
get it up. But it's interesting because when you say that, I looked at the stat that I looked at this week was distance run on the defensive side of the court. So, like, literally, like, how many miles did you run while playing defense over the course of an entire game? And at the top, you have Mikal Bridges, Keegan Murray, Jalen Johnson, Dyson Daniels, Fox and Sabonis are also there. But I'm curious where our boy Randall falls. Looking this up in real time.
I feel like he's going to be low.
This is the kind of insider research our viewers need.
Brian's in the lab.
Hold on. I'm spreadsheeting right now.
Are you also standing at your standing desk right now?
I am standing, actually, right now. I'm a big fan of standing. I do a lot of standing during the day. He's actually not as bad as I thought. He's 71 in the league. I did a couple filters for, like, guys playing at least, like, a handful of games this season. So not horrible. I would have expected potentially worse, but he does play 33 minutes a game, so that buoys that. So, yeah, not the greatest there as we were to expect. But I'll kick it back to you. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I my answer is no to your question, Michael. Even if he has the heart, their team is predicated on like switchability and everybody having the lateral quickness to guard kind of 1 through 5. And I just don't think he has that lateral quickness I hate the fit. I think it is just brutal from where they were to where they are. Goes from kind of a quick, not to switch over the offensive side, but even if you took Cat at his defensive worst, right, he still had some ability to rim protect, and he could switch, and he could bang with some of the largest guys in the league, plus all the offensive upside of, like, one of the best big men as it relates to passing and shooting. It just puts a ball stopper in there and a significant decrease on defense. And I think that's the root of the problem, right? I think it could be boiled down to just that.
Yeah, I think that trade was awful. Like, I mean, the Knicks definitely won that trade. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. It's not that he's a horrible player. He's just not a good fit on that team. And, yeah, I don't know if he's – yeah, I just don't know if he's a player you want on your team. He's, like, one of those interesting guys who needs the ball a lot to be valuable. But, like, I don't know if he's the guy you want with the ball a lot, if that makes sense.
And his stats are really good. But, again, they do seem to be emptier stats than Cat. You know, he doesn't make other guys better, like, watching – Cat does. He's much. I to your point, and I was going to talk about this later, but I do think that they won that trade, and I before liked the fit on paper. Again, it sounded good with Dante DiVincenzo, also a great defender. He almost reminds me of not like a. I had another guy that I honestly forgot about, but I think that Dante DiVincenzo has not been playing as well. Hasn't been shooting the ball as well, and him and Randall is much worse than Cat. So the more the season has gone on, the more the Knicks or front office should be congratulated.
I think connecting the dots on the T-Wolves and the Kings, I actually see some similarities between how DeMar and Julius Randall impact an offense, because I'm a big DeMar fan, but they're not necessarily plug-and-play kind of guys. Like, they're very much so slow the ball down, work in isolation, kind of pound the ball into the ground type of guys, and they'll get a ton of points, but it sort of ruins the flow of the offense. They're both, to me, they're both kind of glorified six men. Like, if they were coming off the bench and could just carry an offense for 5 minutes, that'd be a great place for them. But as like second or third options, it's not.
Yeah, and not neither of them can like take like our, you know, really good defenders on their own. So between those two, yeah, they could definitely sink a team's strategy or approach to the game.
Yeah, I think speaking of kind of the a ball dominant guy who is heliocentric, right, and kind of is the center point of their team, Luka is going to be out for an extended period of time. I think that's the other massive takeaway. Listen, the Mavs right now going into tomorrow are 20-12, 4 seed in the Western Conference. Actually, going into tonight, I believe they play later. No Kyrie tonight either, out with an injury.
And Clay's out too. The whole team's
in. And Clay's out. Yeah, it's an off night for them. But I guess it'll be a very interesting time for the Mavs. I feel like in a lot of teams that go on a championship run, an opportunity for others to step up and kind of experience what it means to have a little bit more responsibility can be a good thing. Or it can kind of show that a team is truly heliocentric and reliant on a primary scorer for them to succeed. Any initial kind of thoughts or feelings of where this might land? And if this it is a, obviously it's not a net positive, but do we think that either there will be benefits that come out of it, or this is going to be kind of a sinking ship here for them in terms of maintaining a float while Luka's out?
Actually do have some thoughts on this, and Luka's actually one of my favorite players in the whole league. He's unbelievable, and he is leading the team in points, rebounds, and assists. Of all the teams in the NBA, I think that the Mavs are best suited to be without their star player. I think Kyrie is a 1A for sure. I think their whole game is going to actually, you know, we were talking about DeMar kind of pounding the paint. We know Luka slows the offense down. I think that this will give them a lot more ways to go quicker with Kyrie at the point. I think Clay, we know, has thrived off of guys like a Kyrie, obviously, and Steph. I think even guys like Quentin Grimes can come off the bench, play a little more. I think they're really good in the paint defensively with Gafford and Lively. I think Lively plays really well in transition, which I think they're going to do a lot more of. I think they have to, just because, you know, Luka's, again, he's not going to... The half-court offense that he plays is the most masterful half-court offense I've actually seen in maybe in a... Not maybe ever, but in a long time. So I think of with their team, the makeup of their team, I just think they're really well-suited. And then I think in the month when he comes back, or 8 weeks, whenever it's going to be, they're going to go right back to it because Luka's that transcendent of a player. So I think they're going to be fine, and I actually think it's going to give a lot of other guys a chance to step up and then maybe make it harder for Kidd to give minutes, because I think some guys are going to step up that I don't even know who doesn't play right now. Like, I think Marshall's going to have a bigger role too, unless he gets suspended again for fighting people. But that's kind of my take. I actually think it's going to be really interesting to see who's going to step up, and I think they're going to do well. They're also 7-3 without him this year, so they're a good team.
I hear your point there, and I think it makes sense. The only thing I'm worried about looking at this roster, which I'm looking at right now, is who's going to create. Like, I feel like roster construction-wise, they've done it well, where they've surrounded Luka and Kyrie with lob threats like Gafford and Lively, guys who can 3-and-D. But I don't know who's going to create. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie's going to play a lot more minutes, and he can definitely create, so I think he's got to step up. Besides that, a lot's going to be on Kyrie. And even when Luka went out in the Christmas game, like, Kyrie just went bonkers. And, like, Kyrie is just a fun man to watch play. Like, an interesting dude, but, like, you still put him up there with anyone of who can just make exciting plays and just do things that you're not expecting. So I think a lot's going to be on him, but that's the biggest concern I have, is who's going to create offense when Luka's out. So We'll see, though. There's definitely opportunity for someone to step up.
Dinwiddie was the guy I actually forgot to mention. I'm glad you brought him up, because I do think he can, but I also think he can have hot and cold streaks, so he's going to need to step up and be consistent.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I would add is they do... well, first off, fighting is so back. Go fighting. Two fights in, like, the last 4 days. NBA...
Risky week.
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure Adam Silver is super pro crossover events with MMA, but here we are, and consider me a fan. I'd love a little animosity.
It's the holidays. It's a lot of family time. Yeah, people are stressed out.
A lot of built up tension.
Yeah, I mean, that Amanda Thompson body slam was that was a legitimate takedown. Like two points.
I didn't see it.
How many games did he get suspended? Was it only three?
I didn't see the output of it, but yeah, he took Tyler Herro down so hard. Definitely suggest seeing it at home. But hopping back to the Mavs, I think the interesting thing about them is I don't necessarily, as long as they're a top six team, I don't actually think their, for them, home court means that much. They have players, especially Luka, who has played in those crazy atmospheres since the age of 16 years old. I think for them, they've shown, and they have guys now that have played roles in Clay and PJ Washington and Kyrie, experienced guys that know how to get the job done in the playoffs. So I think it's a little less important. I do wonder if it gives, you know, guys that are very, to your point, Michael, like Spencer Dinwiddie, like Quentin Grimes, and also Jaden Hardy, who I think is the guy that gets lost in it a little bit, an opportunity to succeed. So I think it's good for the depth. I'm keeping my eye on it. Now, if they fall into the playing game, I think that's a different story because, you know, I think they're better kind of slow rolling into the playoffs versus having to be full bore ahead. But it'll be interesting to see.
I think one big picture thought on the Luka injury is, so he's been first team All-NBA the last five seasons, and with the 65-game requirement, he's going to be eliminated from contention.
Ooh.
So he's kind of been preseason, just like always lock him into first team All-NBA. And so it opens up an opportunity for someone new to slip in there. The guys that come to mind for me are like, because it's positionless now, so Anthony Davis could get in. I'm assuming I lock in SGA, Tatum, Giannis, and Jokic. I feel like they're a pretty safe bet. And now the fifth spot becomes open to guys like maybe AD, Anthony Edwards, maybe Jalen Brunson, Karl-Anthony Towns, Steph, guys like that come to mind.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
That's a good point.
I am rooting, not that we're playing this game, but just because we're talking about it, I'm rooting for Anthony Edwards because he's my boy. I don't know. A lot of those players are really playing well. I think it's going to be an interesting... Obviously, we're going to have to see how the rest of the season goes, but I would love to see Ant come up this year and step up.
Mm-hmm. So I think for the last thing that's going on, I do want to talk about the Denver Nuggets a bit, but I'm gonna use that as my little bit of my New Year's Eve reflection and then resolution as well. So just for the audience at home, this bit is going to be an apology or a reflection on something that either you said out loud or you thought or an NBA team did in the previous year that you look back on with regret. And then a resolution is something we'd like to see different in the next year, right? So that might be a trade. That might be a change in kind of how something is covered. We can go all over the place. And I'm going to actually use the Nuggets on both sides. So my regret and what I'll raise my hand on is say, I should have never doubted Jokic's individual ability to carry a team to success in the regular season. What he is doing is truly and utterly, it's hard to put into words, to qualify with stats, to continue to try and contextualize in the totality of the season. It's phenomenal. And he single-handedly is keeping them afloat. They are 17-13. They're in the seventh seed. They're one game back from the Lakers and the Clippers, and have positioned themselves to potentially avoid a play-in game, which is amazing. I didn't think it was going to be possible, looking at their roster and how they started the season. And he has done it through high usage, high scoring, high minutes, just all the things that you could possibly imagine. The thing that I want to now say is, I need the Nuggets to get their fucking shit together for this upcoming year. What they have done to put the pieces around him such that this is the requirement, it actually hurts my soul, right? A couple of quick highlights. So they played the Cleveland Cavaliers the other night and gave up 141 points to the Cavs. At one point in the fourth quarter, Jokic was on the floor with, or I apologize, the third quarter. Jokic was on the floor with Jamal, Christian Brown, Julian Strother, and Peyton Watson, and then came back in and played with Hunter Tyson, Zeke Nagy, Christian Brown, and Russell Westbrook. And to nobody's surprise, they got annihilated in those minutes. Subsequently, the next night, they just beat the Pistons, and when they rolled, they were up by 26 points when Jokic left the court in the fourth quarter, and they rolled out a lineup of Strother, Watson, Hunter Tyson, DeAndre Jordan, and Jamal Murray, and immediately the Pistons went on a 16-0 run with Jokic off the floor. The Nuggets front office, A, needs to raise their hand and say, we messed this draft thing up super badly. We overvalued our understanding of the kind of talent that is on our bench. We should have never let some of these veterans walk. And we need to make a serious move to put the right pieces around Jokic, not in the offseason, but in prior to the trade deadline. We deserve to see him surrounded by way above replacement or end of the bench replacement NBA talent. And that includes both defensive and offensive players, because what they have right now is unacceptable.
I mean, that's the, like, when they won the championship, they still weren't a deep team. Like, they have a lot of money committed to that starting, whatever, one, two, three. Well, I guess they're top four guys. But they had to let Bruce Brown walk, which was huge. Like, he was a huge glue piece. KCP, yeah, just a winner, a wing who can guard. And so that team, at its peak, was thin, I would say, on the thin side. And so when you give Michael Porter Jr. essentially a max contract, you pay Aaron Gordon his money, you're not left with much. You know, I'm not a salary cap expert, but there's not a lot left over. So I think to your point, well, one, let me know if I'm wrong, but two, I think they have to get creative. Like, one of those two guys would have to go in a trade. I don't know what that would look like, but I feel like that front office is in a tough spot.
They're also super cheap, and they never were willing to pay the luxury tax. So I think now that they're in that position, that is a big part of it. But I think you're right. And I think your point is spot on. They were 100% healthy the entire playoff run when they won the championship. So they've never had that ability. And it, like, listen, don't even get me started. These are the same guys that were like, yeah, bringing in Russell Westbrook as a solution. Russell Westbrook was wide open in the corner against the Cavs and clinked three threes in a row and got so frustrated he took off his shooting sleeve and threw it into the crowd. Like, the guy does not fit on this on this roster.
All right, you respect Russell Westbrook, okay? MVP.
It's a perfect way for them to be like, oh, we took strides to get better when they really didn't. They actually,
but yeah, you're right. They're also not paying him much, just, you know.
Yeah,
so
but, like, that $4 million would be better being burnt and having him not on the roster and giving somebody else an opportunity. He is a net negative for everything they do. Anyways, that is
crazy. It's kind of crazy that he has a shooting sleeve. Like, what's it doing, you know?
It's keeping his arm in the slot.
It's keeping his arm warm.
That's for damn sure.
I don't know who's more of a losing player, him or Julius Randle, but that's besides the point.
Oh, I'd for sure rather have Russell on that contract.
On that contract, sure. I'll give you that.
That's hilarious.
All right, so for me, and I mentioned it to you guys already, but I knew I was going to be right. I just didn't know how fast I was going to be right, that the Golden State Warriors would go from, like, top three, top two in the West, hot start, to just, like, I wrote it down. They were 4-12, including the win yesterday. They've been 4-12 in their last 16 games. That's not good. You're not going to make it to the playoffs doing that. So they're already sitting in the play-in game. I think they're, like, the ninth seed or something right now. It is tight. they could turn around. But, you know, we were talking about, like, Buddy Hield. Like, we were talking about a bunch of silly stuff. And the only reason they won yesterday is because Kuminga went off for, like, a career high in points or something stupid like that. So I think they're in trouble. I think, you know, the only way they stay afloat is if Curry stays healthy. And, you know, as he's getting older, you know, who knows if that's going to happen. But, you know, I don't think this Dennis Schroeder trade, while I like it, I don't think that moves the needle. I think they're in trouble right now, and I don't see that really changing. I don't think they, you know, they'll make it in the play-in game. I don't think they'll make any noise. So I just have to tip, you know, tip my cap to myself for that one.
Well done.
You can toot your own horn. Toot.
I think there's a lot of things that I'd like to talk about, but I feel like for next year, I just want good health for all these NBA players. Like, when was
And everyone.
You know what?
But mostly the guys that play basketball.
Just NBA players.
Happy New Year to all of our listeners and sponsors. no, but like, but when was the last time anyone thought about Kawhi Leonard? Like, one of the best basketball players on planet Earth.
It makes me
and
so
who
sad.
Is close to coming back, per my sources. I was talking to Shams on the phone earlier, and he was giving me the goods. But, I mean, you have Kawhi, Embiid, Chet, Paolo, and Franz. You got Middleton. So, like, the NBA is just better if everyone's healthy. Not only that, but that could really change the trajectory of some of these teams and just the playoff races in general. You know, we talked about the Clippers and how they've been an upstart, like kind of how we're having the Luka discussion, like guys step up, like Zubac having a career year, Harden like showing he could be a capable second option. Like let's just play the scenario of Kawhi Leonard comes back and is a healthy Kawhi Leonard, like that team's really interesting. Like they're not up there with OKC, the best team of all time, but they're kind of in that they could easily be in that second tier. So I think that could be really interesting.
I'm done with the Kawhi hypotheticals. Like, he's incredible, but even if he comes back, they're gonna be really good for like a month. Like, he can't make it through a full playoff anymore. It's just not possible.
Probably, but you never know.
It's just like, you know, if somebody tells you who they are, believe them. And he's just not healthy.
Yeah.
Sure. Well,
there's one way to find out.
That's fair.
That's true. On my list of New Year's resolutions, back to our Kings conversation, I want the Kings to win a home game because that's too long for the beam to not be lit. You can't hold it in that long.
You think it works anymore?
It's got to come out. Also, I want to talk a little bit about the Beyonce concert that happened in the Texans-Ravens game.
Yeah.
That was a Super Bowl-level halftime show. On Christmas Day, we haven't seen that before. I'd love to see some NBA halftime shows that get somewhere close to that.
They're all horrible. All of the NBA halftime shows, like All-Star Game or whatever, they're all really bad. So they could definitely take, like Adam Silver could take some notes.
I've got some bands that I could recommend to Adam Silver.
Well,
I was gonna save
this because I need to workshop it. But I think, like, I'm gonna put together and. Quick little plug here for the blog on btrviews.com. But I think mm-hmm. the next blog that I'm going to do is a complete overhaul of how and when NBA games are played. And I think one of the elements of that we should do is a like collective halftime show that is a live concert streamed directly to the arenas from like different locations as part of this that mirror the extravagance of the NBA type halftime show that we have, like a certain subset. It might be in alignment with the in-season tournament. It might be just Tuesday night. We get back to Prestige Heights basketball, but for each one of those kind of premium occurrences, we have a, you know, collaborative funded by all teams halftime show, that is a live concert that is primetime viewing. So more to come there, but, yeah, I totally agree, Alex.
And then, I remember. Yeah, you go.
No, mine's gonna be silly. So you go, Alex.
Mine's gonna be silly too.
I'll go. You guys are so silly. Unbelievable. You guys are both in trouble. You got the
goose. So, all right, then I'm going to go then. I will go. The Struts should be the band because I've seen them. Alex, Brian, you have seen them. Jacob, we're going to get you to concert. They are what live music should be and what we should all strive to see. And I don't like the fact that they have 2.2 million listeners on Spotify. They should get up to Coldplay level of 94 million viewers on Spotify. Monthly
Coldplay
listeners.
Coldplay is nine. Wow. Good.
They're
go
number
Coldplay.
One. They're number that's one. A, I just checked that out. A,
wait, say that number one more time.
94.5 million monthly listeners on Spotify is Coldplay. And the Struts are at 2.2 million. The world doesn't make sense.
Almost 100 million listeners a month. That, like, blows my mind.
I was shocked. Wow. I was shocked.
Wow.
I love Coldplay. Good for them. But, like...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I nothing against them.
Nothing against them. They could be a halftime show, too. But, Alex, you had some silliness going, too.
I have a memory of a Bulls game. I think it was when we were in college. It was nationally televised. D. Rose years. They were playing someone else. They may have been playing a LeBron team. And at the transition between the first quarter and the second quarter, a rapper from Chicago, whose name I don't want to mention, was sitting courtside. The break in the quarters happens, and he comes on and does like a live show in between the two quarters. It wasn't even a halftime show. I thought that was...
Did he play School of Spirit, if I'm assuming who you're talking about?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, he's a dick, yeah, but great. That's the one. That's fun. Wow.
Yeah that sounds... So more I like that idea.
More of that.
All right, Chance the Rapper could show up to a Bulls game, and maybe someone will watch.
No, hey, I'll hit the lab and get the ideas fully fleshed out. Adam, just give me a call. We can talk through it whenever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Adam's a regular listener, so yeah,
I've seen his name pop up a time or two.
Oh, for sure. So, I think I still get to go, Jacob. I'd like to personally. Thank you. I'd like to personally apologize to Andrew Wiggins. I read an article from Marcus Thompson. You guys remember when he was out last year for undisclosed personal reasons?
Yeah.
So Marcus Thompson, one, is the best writer on The Athletic and probably the best beat writer I've ever read. So he's a wordsmith, so just a little shout out to him. The reason that Andrew Wiggins was out was because his dad was going through such a... whatever cancer he was going through, it was a terrible disease, and he was going through it for an extended period of time. It was painful. It was tough. And Andrew was so close with his family. That's the reason he loved basketball. He wants to be the best father he could be. And I'm like, and the Warriors stood behind him, and they kept it private, and they were like, you don't want to tell anyone. We're going to keep this to yourself. And then it made me like, and I wasn't super like, oh, you should tell everyone what you're doing. But I'm like, why is he not? How come I don't know why he's out for a bunch of games? Like, I have the personal, you know, I should have the, I should know.
You have the
like,
right, I don't the right have the knowledge, right to know. Yeah.
And I didn't. And I tried not to judge him so hard. And now I'm like, I respect him a lot more. And the Warriors organization, because there are things bigger than basketball. And I just wanted to apologize to Andrew for that, because he's been a fantastic basketball player. Seems like an even better dude. So,
that's Michael.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It was a great article. I really think you guys should read it. It's fantastic. What I'd like to see for next year is I'd like to see Zach LaVine get traded. One, the Bulls need to get a rebuild. We just need to. Io needs to get more. He just needs to get more minutes on our squad. And I also I'd like Zach to prove to the masses that he's a winning player by being in a better situation. He's been on the Timberwolves, we talked about this, then they were terrible, and then the Bulls, which is a putrid organization. And I'd like him to have the opportunity to prove that he could be a great second, third, I mean, if he's a third scoring guy on your team, you're awesome, but a second guy. And that's what I wish for in 2025.
Love that. I hope so. Seems too. Like we got an awesome year ahead, because I know all of our wishes will come true. Good juju moving forward, so love that for us. Well, I think we could wrap with a little bit of a fun bit here. I think I sat on my couch and I texted a couple of you just watching Wemby and just thinking, I would pay so much money to watch this man play basketball. And then later in the day, Steph Curry hit three just... you can't make them three-pointers to put a game that was out of reach back into reach. The one that was a double pump over...
From the corner?
From the corner over LeBron. Like, those are just magical moments, and I'd pay a lot of money. But I started to go through the list, and I didn't know how many people there were and that I would actually pay money to kind of be excited to go see. So what I'd like to do is challenge us collectively to take $100 and... The smallest, we'll do the smallest increment is $10. So we could have 10 players that are all $10. We could pay more for some players to give us better odds of seeing them more regularly. But let's take our collective $100 and figure out how we'd want to spend it based on watchability alone, players that we want to go watch play basketball. So I think that's going to be the context. Any questions on the game before we go ahead and get it going?
I do have a question. And you might have to cut this, so I apologize. But what's stopping us from, like, just doing $10 for everyone? Like, why would we ever have to go higher than $10?
Well, that means you're going to see those players the same amount, right? So, like, if we think about it,
prioritizing.
You're
going
to... Okay. Yeah, so you're going to see if you use $10 each, that's the same amount. You spend a little bit more, that's going to give you... more access to that player.
Exclusive,
right?
So, VIP access. If you want to be sniffing Wemby's jockstrap, gotta pay
better up. Better put your full $100 on the table. Ooh. Put your money where your mouth is, and then put your mouth where his money is, you know? Just wow. In that order.
God, man, I got bingo money to spend. Right. No,
this is easy. Yeah, this is easy.
So I think... Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was going to say, I know we're obviously talking about current players, but... Quick little side bit, I would love to see Blake Griffin and Chris Paul when they were doing that. Lob City. That would have been amazing to watch. Oof.
Why don't we, we'll come back at a later date. We'll do like historical teams that we would, because those 94, 95 Rockets teams would also be the five Slamma Jamma teams would be a blast to watch as well.
Yeah.
Oh, good call. Good call. Let's do that later.
But, all right, so let's maybe start here. I think for me, and to this day, Steph Curry is the number one attraction in basketball. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Agree. Hard agree. Would love to see him play.
No question. The Olympics, I got a basketball boner the entire game.
He's an easy number one for me. The freedom at which he plays with... Honestly, it makes me want to light the beam, but there's nobody else out there who could just like that shot you were talking about in the corner against the Lakers, where he like double clutches and then shoots it from his hip. Like if that doesn't go in, every single other player in the NBA feels a little bit bad, maybe gets yelled at by their coach. He has complete green light, as green as it gets. Oh, it's so fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he came the next shot. He came off a screen from 30 feet, and there was like room to take up. He's like, "Nah, it's a better shot because I'm from 30 feet." I don't know, Michael, Brian. I'm sensing some hesitation from you.
I'm hesitating a little bit. It's like the price of admission. There's a couple different ways to think about it, but like I'm putting myself in the shoes that I'm like spending my actual money. And it's tough. I feel like I'm between Wemby, Jokic, and Curry. It's like, sure, could Curry be the most just like raw fun to watch? But I feel like from like a just a like Wemby brings something different to the table, but just from like a basketball head perspective, like we're talking about Jokic's dominance, and it's almost like if you're just talking like X's and O's and you want to sit down and like really take in a game and like dissect it, like I think I just have to go Jokic. Like it just feels wrong going anywhere else, in my opinion. That said, we could go with Curry, but I don't want to blow my budget on that. You know what I'm saying?
The thing with Steph...
I do know what you're saying.
The thing with Steph,
I don't.
Is you...
Please elaborate.
You also have to take into account his pregame warm-up, you know? Like
you're
paying for tickets, you're bringing the family, you're getting there an hour early to watch that warm-up. It's extra entertainment.
Yeah, I think I'm fine if I
Curry.
Well, I wonder maybe if we just take Brian your thread and extend it out, is that our top three? For me, I think Steph and Wemby at this current point are just like, that to me is my top two if I want to see anybody play basketball, just because I think there's never been anything like it before. I think for me, Jokic would be in a next tier below, because I think it's like savant style, but I don't know how, seeing it every game in and game out, like I don't know if he does anything superbly unique other than be the best player in basketball. And I know that that's like a crazy thing to say, but for me, I'd almost rather take Ant over Jokic, because I think the fireworks that Ant can detonate and some of those dunks and moments are just our next level. See,
you know who I'd rather pay for than Ant? It was a little bit of a surprise, maybe a surprise. I'd rather watch a healthy Ja Morant.
I agree.
I disagree because I like, and this is not like, from a basketball perspective, I just don't like Ja, and I really like Ant, like off the court. That's just, if we're separating just the basketball player, yeah, Ja's crazy 360s, his dunks, his athletic ability, he's really good at basketball. But I go.
He's like that once in a generation, just like athlete. I mean, he's like prime D Rose, prime Westbrook. Like, if you think about who's the best like springy athlete in the NBA, it's still probably Ja, right? When he's going right, it's still probably him. Maybe I'm forgetting someone, but
it's fun watching a guy with that type of vertical who leaps up and then figures it out. You know, like he gets up to his peak and then decides what he wants to do with it. That's fun.
He got a little bit of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That dunk against the Celtics, where he jumped and then decided it was the day after, or I think the two games after he said he wasn't going to dunk ever again, was I think his words. And then he jumps with his back to the basket and does a double pump reverse slam, and it's like, oh yeah, that's Ja Morant.
Porzingis? Was it near Porzingis?
It was like around Porzingis. Yeah. He went like up and under. I think the hard part with Ja is he doesn't really play, right? So like I don't know how we factor that into this game, and maybe we just don't. We just say like at their peak of their powers. But that's the hard part about him.
Yeah, I think you assume like he's on the court.
That's right.
Like, all these guys will be on the court. Yeah.
But so we're doing like a day of stub up purchase. We've seen the lineups.
And I like that. Yeah.
That makes the most sense.
Is there anyone else in kind of the top tier? I mean, LeBron, is he still in our top tier? Do we just, at kind of from the greatness? I mean, I want to be cognizant of our missing member of our starting five here. And you know, I know Ian would be all about still getting to see LeBron. He's probably the only other one for me that is in that kind of standalone tier. I know there's a lot of other fun guys, but anyone else that we're missing?
We think Giannis, or is he just like such a bulldog and a beast that it's like he's just using his athleticism and he's bigger and longer than everybody? That's why I'm actually, way more I talk about it, he is a little tier lower just because
he's a little lower. I think my top four would be, like Curry, Wemby, Jokic are my top three. And then for fourth, I'm like having to think about it, but it probably would still be LeBron for me.
And KD's really good to watch too. KD's really fun.
Yeah, KD's fun to watch.
All right, let's start showing out some numbers here.
So maybe I think, you know, we definitely want to make Curry and Wemby, I think, probably, you know, our top two in terms of the frequency we get to see. So maybe we spend 20 bucks on or 22 on Curry and 18 on Wemby.
Yeah, holy number on Wemby. I like it.
Yeah, do something like that. That sure. Gives us $60 remaining, and then from there maybe it's
15 on Jokic.
15 on Jokic.
I was going to go 15 on Jokic, and I think then that gives us maybe the ability to do 10 each on LeBron, Ant, and Ja. Or do we want to exclude Ant from that? Do we want to just do LeBron and Ja?
No. Let's keep Ant. That's my boy.
All right, so that would be another 40.
Hold on a second.
pump the brakes.
Yeah, let's pump the brakes.
So we haven't mentioned Drew Holiday yet.
Yeah, we don't need to mention him again. So the brakes have been pumped.
I think I love me some Ant. If I'm just talking about enjoying watching someone play, I'd probably rather watch Luka or Kyrie, honestly, personally.
Luka's really good.
This is an interesting perspective from a group of four who will never dunk and have never dunked. Because I'm kind of with you guys. Like, I appreciate some craftiness, some nice passing, some 40-foot threes over a big tomahawk dunk. Because I could relate a little bit more. Like, seeing someone dunk is something that I'll never be able to do. And it just feels like I'm watching something fake.
I feel like, for some reason, my list isn't reflecting this. I feel like I want to disagree with you, but then my list disagrees. My list agrees with you, so I'm in a weird place right now. I'm in a weird limbo.
Seems a little problematic there, Brian.
Like, the way I describe it, when I see someone dunk, like Melvin, you mentioned CP3 and Blake Griffin, like, there's something inside me that starts, like, tingling when you know a dunk is about to happen, and then when it goes down, it's just, like, just pure euphoria. It's like you have a piece of watermelon that's just like a juicy piece that's in your face, and
it's like yelling bingo.
Yeah, it's like yelling bingo. So I do love dunks, especially.
Oh, no doubt.
I do love dunks.
When Anthony Edwards detonated on John Collins and sent both of them to the locker room, like, there was that moment, just it just feels different being there in person. It's just like he ended his life. Like, He took his life force and ended it. And I want to be there to see that when that happens again.
I wish these guys could... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the one argument against the dunk is a guy can be crafty all game, all 48, well, all however many, 30 minutes, 35 minutes he's playing, and then you get that dunk is that moment. So if we're talking from a collective overall, like a utilitarian standpoint of my philosophy class, an ethics class, I know. Thank you, Jacob. I think that it would be craftiness is throughout the whole game, and amazing passes and things that we enjoy. And then we do get that tingle moment, Brian, though, from a good dunk.
And, like, that big dunk, like when Ja just dunks over someone, like, that doesn't happen most games, but it is spectacular. So you kind of have to, like, weigh the pros and cons there.
Yeah, you've changed my mind. I regret everything I said about dunks. I would give $10 to Ant and $10 to Ja.
I forgot about Luka though, which is crazy because he just got hurt. So I like. Do we?
Honestly, this is gonna maybe go against the rest of the group. I don't love watching him play because
I can't stand watching him play basketball. I'm out on Luka.
It's like watching Harden on the Rockets. It's just too much him.
Oh, but he's better than Harden. I hear what you're saying. He does.
Harden was really good.
You're right, though.
But if we do 22 Curry, 18 Wemby, 15 Jokic, call it 12 LeBron, 10 Ant, 10 Ja, I think we're at 87?
Yes, 87. Yep.
So we only have room for one more player.
Yeah, we really only have room for one more, and then we could distribute the last $3 appropriately between our existing.
Wait, what do we do with the last $3?
We'll just add it. We'll maybe bump up.
Oh, just donate it to charity or something?
Yeah. That's not this kind of podcast.
So do we want to do... I mean, there's a lot of guys who are fun. Like, I think Trae Young and Kyrie are super fun. Like, just talk about fun. Like, they're fun to watch.
Kyrie over Trae, in my opinion. Because the stuff he does with the ball is... He really has it on a yo-yo. People always say he's got the best handles maybe ever. Like, just specifically handles.
Yeah.
I got a couple wild cards to add in. If we know they're playing, if it's a day of purchase, Zion, and then it's not sexy basketball, but when Kawhi was healthy on Toronto, I loved watching him play. And it's kind of like, at this point, it's like seeing Bigfoot if he's on a basketball court. you know, and actually playing, not in street clothes, it requires a little bit extra dough.
What about Dyson Daniels?
Oh.
You know, I was actually not going to, even in a joking way, bring up Jalen Johnson, but I think I'm a little bit early on that one. But I'm obsessed watching him play basketball.
Just for the record, I just have to throw this out there. You also thought that Bilal Coulibaly was going to be an all-star next year, and I'm just not going to forget that.
Next year.
I'm going to bring it up next year. We'll talk about it again. Don't worry.
To be fair, I also said Jalen Johnson. So, like, if I bet 50% on, like, throwing random dart throws at guys and hitting all-stars, that's pretty good.
It's not bad.
All right, so... I think we go Kyrie. I think that if I'm hearing consensus between the guys, I think Kyrie's the last guy at the $10 mark.
I would go Zion, but I'm fine with Kyrie as well.
Wait, so we're not going Giannis then? We're eliminating Giannis.
We're excluding Giannis.
I think I agree with that. Like, Zion and Kyrie both have more wow in their game than Giannis.
And the only reason that I say we don't go Giannis is I don't know if we'll ever actually get to see him play basketball again, period. So, like, I don't think we risk our money, you know, if he...
What the hell does that mean? What does that mean?
Zion might never play a basketball game again, so...
Sure. But think about it. If we could pay $10 to guarantee that he'd be healthy and play...
There it is.
Yeah, so I think here's what we're doing with our money. We're going... 22 or yeah, you know, I'm gonna do a little dictatorship. We're gonna go 20 or are we off $10?
No, 22 plus 18.
Oh no, yeah, we're
40,
good.
55,
so
60,
we're gonna
60,
go.
67.
You guys
we're gonna go
to business school, right? How many accounting majors do we need to tell
this up?
20
easy. Don't talk about our people. Don't talk about our people that way. I'm gonna put $25 on stuff. I bumped it up.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
We're going to go 18 on Wemby, 15 on Yoke, 12 on LeBron, and then 10 on Ja, Ant, and Kyrie.
Man.
And that's the watchability ratings, or price of admission, please. Let me keep my bitch straight here for the below-the-rim guys.
Money well spent.
Do we think, like, legit, if these seven played on an NBA team and you had to fill out the rest with, like, you know, D2 college players, do they automatically win the championship?
I actually think if you put these seven on an NBA team and we were the four guys off the bench, they would win an NBA championship. I'm not even joking.
Well, we would just watch.
What are we
talking about? And we'd be able to watch for free. Maybe we'd get paid a little bit, you know?
Do you think they'd win the championship if collectively, out of the four of us, we had to play 5 minutes a game?
That's a great question. We have this seven, but we all have to play individually. All four of us have to play at least 5 minutes in the game.
No, collectively, the four of us need to play 5 minutes.
I don't think that changes the equation. I think all four of us would have to play 5 minutes in the game.
You can hide someone. Yeah.
I don't think you could hide us. I don't think we could be hidden.
No, because you have six fouls.
Yeah, but the clock stops. This isn't a high school game, or whatever. No, the clock stopped in high school. Yeah, this isn't a Park District game.
Yeah,
foul committed, it doesn't eat into your 5 minutes.
You just milk the offensive possession, it would be
an auto bucket on defense. Like, legitimately an auto bucket.
No. I don't think it would be. You'd play a zone, and you could do some look at who you have on the court. You got Wemby. And, like, Ant and LeBron, I think you for 5 minutes...
I'd be so scared to play those 5 minutes. I'd be so scared. Oh, my God.
Jacob would be chucking up threes. Michael, on Sunday, this was epic. It was kind of like Steph against the Lakers. Jacob got hot. I think he hit three threes in a row. And then he comes down, similar to how he hit that shot against the Lakers, like a pin down top of the key, and Jacob hoisted a three from, like, four steps in from half court. We're talking like further than NBA three. It actually looked good from where I was sitting on the bench, but
it felt good too. God.
Jacob, that makes me happy.
You kept saying that. You're like, it felt good. I'm like,
listen, I
trust you.
And we won. We won. So, you know,
that's true.
That's all that counts.
That makes me sad.
On that note, you know, 40 foot threes are definitely from below the rim. And this was another lovely edition of our podcast here. Hope you all enjoyed. Hope everybody has a wonderful, safe New Year's, and we will talk to you all in 2025.
Good stuff, boys. Later, good all. Stuff.